This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
In late March 2017, DIA organized its first ever DIA BioVenture Day in Glasgow, a new platform designed to connect stakeholders critical to the success of bioventures and designed to investigate if the current bioventure paradigm delivers equitable return for patients, investors, and healthcare systems in Europe. Barbara Fryshem, Executive Director of European Biopharmaceutical Enterprises, was one of the presenters at this inaugural gathering. Founded in 2000 as a special group of the European Federation of Pharmaceutical Industries and Associations, the EBE serves as the voice of biopharma and emerging science in Europe and published a position paper on Europe's biotech ecosystem in September 2016. I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of the IA Global Forum. I'm very pleased that Barbara Fryshem has joined us today to discuss this ecosystem in detail. Welcome, Barbara, and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Albert, for the introduction, and thank you for inviting me to participate in this discussion.
The title of your BioVenture Day presentation was phrased quite strongly, quote, Europe's flawed and underfunded biotech ecosystem, unquote. What did you mean by that?
Well, this position paper was a bit of a labor of love of our members, which are a mixture of the big pharmaceutical companies in Europe, as well as small and medium-sized biotech enterprises. And what our members find is that in Europe, there is fantastic funding available for research. But when we try to translate the outcome of the research into successful businesses, we seem to fail at some point in time. So if you look at Europe only, over time, there is progression and growth. If you compare Europe to the US, you know, we're sixfold less funding invested in biotech companies in Europe than in the US. And we're trying to help Europe's science community find better ways to fund their businesses when they try to translate their science into businesses. And that's really what it is all about.
Well, let me ask you, is there less funding available in Europe, or is the funding available by it's more risk averse, if you will, compared to the US?
Well, in our position paper, we try to describe the situation as we see it, and it's a mix of both. You have certainly the case that Europe is a lot more risk averse. You perhaps also find that in Europe, the universities are still not quite as geared to also thinking in terms of business rather than only in research output. But clearly, you also have a lot more of funding and specialist funding available in the United States. So one of my members told me, I can look at all the European funders that could invest into a business like mine in a week. If I go to the US in a week, I've not even finished looking at the investors in the US, in New York. So New York is not necessarily the only place where you can find funding for biotech businesses. So there is quite a lot of disparity.
Well, of course, there are ecosystems in Boston, in San Francisco, and other places on the U.S. side. Are there any such ecosystems in Europe, for example, in Munich, perhaps, where there is money, there are ideas, there are academic centers with great creativity? Aren't those ecosystems potentially able to work as well as the ones in the U.S.? And if they don't, why don't they?
I think in the long run, there is an opportunity for such ecosystems, and they do exist in Europe, to improve how they work. I think, let me put it that way, I'm the spokesperson for the work of our working group at EBE. There is a question of insularity as well. You know, the Munich ecosystem works fantastically within Germany, but you know, Germany is only one part of the European Union. And if you look at Paris, they have a fantastic research and biotech ecosystem as well. But again, it's driven by national and sometimes even subnational initiatives. I think if the whole biotech ecosystem funding could be a bit more coordinated, we might find it helps progress things.
To dig a little deeper, in your presentation you stated that, quote, Europe's issue is its translation capability of basic science into commercial ventures, end quote. What factors have helped create this translational gap, if we can call it that?
We may be simply a bit behind the development in the United States a few years back. And if people realize that, perhaps that can help speed things up. Initially, even in the US, people didn't necessarily think of taking out a patent when they discovered something new before they published on the new science that they discovered. But certainly with penicillin and the business that was built on it, or the follow-up antibiotics, people realized that, yes, research in universities is fantastic and necessary, but some of its output can actually help found successful businesses. And this has been embraced by universities in the US to a degree that it hasn't been embraced at universities in Europe. Alexander von Gabein, the vice chancellor of the Karolinska Institute, speaks very well on that topic and simply says that in Europe the culture hasn't developed to the degree that it has in the US. What that also leads to is that in Europe you do have technology transfer offices in universities and you have fantastic people working there, but all in all sometimes the offices themselves are underfunded or understaffed, and perhaps some of the researchers at the universities have unrealistic expectations of what their work output might be worth in economic terms. And in that sort of an ecosystem, it's very difficult to strike chords between business and researchers that actually make the output attractive to the business and then in the long run will provide really good return to the universities.
A moment ago, you mentioned the attitudes of researchers and their expectations on economic return. Let me make sure that we get that clear. Are their expectations excessive or are their expectations too low? In other words, do researchers think they're going to make a lot of money, or do they think they're going to make not enough money and therefore they will not even reach out to the investment community?
What we found mostly is that their expectations are too high and that they're asking for too high a percentage in return rather than a lower percentage and then additional investment, so in overall returns. So you can set up a license fee and you say you pay me 2% or 10% of whatever you make, but if you have a return over a certain amount, then we get an added percentage. If you strike a deal like that with a low front percentage and, you know, participation in any additional earnings, you probably find it easier to find a good deal for your research output than when you ask for a high upfront percentage where people who don't even know whether your research product is going to make a business might not quite be so interested.
Can you speak a little perhaps about the dynamics between the researchers, the technology transfer offices, and the investors? Now, for example, wouldn't the tech transfer office be a useful go-between that perhaps can help the researchers be more realistic about their financial expectations of return and build a bridge to the investment community such that the investors will be attracted to the researchers' ideas and look at the investment in a proper way, shall we say, commensurate with the potential of the technology?
We do see that the technology transfer offices would be very useful in that, and that's provided that they're adequately staffed and adequately funded so that they really have the time to provide the necessary advice to the researchers that seek to translate their research output into a successful business. And the members of my working group found that overall that may not always be the case. It may work for some of the bigger European universities, but as a whole, that isn't necessarily the case. So one of our aims is also to seek out the association of the technology transfer offices, but also perhaps the deans of European universities, to see how improvements in this ecosystem could be achieved with the aim of ensuring realistic expectations by researchers and good business deals for both sides.
You mentioned the tech transfer offices are not sufficiently staffed and funded. Are they sufficiently experienced? Have they had exposure to the way tech transfer offices work, perhaps, in the United States to learn about how these transfers are made profitably for everybody? Do they have the experience other than the funding and the staffing?
That is a very valid question, and that is something that has been discussed in our group. I'm personally not able to speak to you on that, but I certainly recall that within the group this was discussed. So exchanges between what works, what's a good example for a good technology transfer deal in the US is certainly something that can inform similar deals in Europe. And I think exchange of information between both sides of the Atlantic would be very useful.
Looking to the future then, I wanted to ask you, what are your recommendations for the way forward, and where and how could perhaps our DIA members or other professionals in Europe contribute to help turn good science into good business in Europe?
DIA is certainly recognized as a provider of relevant information and trustworthy information. So as I mentioned before, that ensuring that experiences from the US side become the business or the learnings on which European technology transfer offices begin to build their businesses or grow their experience, DIA can have a critical role in facilitating such information transfer. Quite clearly, I think it has to go beyond that, and we really also have to speak to the people who run the universities to ensure that a certain amount of business sense is also taught to science students so they understand the principles of economics and how to even ask for useful deals. I've worked with DIA before, but the one thing that I'm not knowledgeable about is how far your reach really is into the academic society to the degree that we can work for that change. But in Europe, I think it's really something we have to strive for, and that's mobilize the universities and ensure that they also understand the need for teaching more than just pure science, even to science students.
Is this a matter, in the end, of communication skills between the academic community on the one hand and the investor community on the other? Do they perhaps not know how to talk to each other, investors and researchers?
It's a good question. I'm reflecting on it, and I would think to a certain degree that might have been the case, but I've also met enough investors who learn to speak the language of the scientists. I'm not entirely sure how much of a degree of miscommunication is still there. I think it's more that science students do not learn enough about business. So they're not even sure what they have that could be sold. And if they believe they have a good idea, they're not necessarily certain on how to go about it. So I'm a veterinarian by training. And quite clearly, as a vet, I should be expected to run my own business. But, you know, business acumen training was really, really minimal in the curriculum of that university degree. And I believe if you study pure science, it's even worse. So if universities would offer some more business training to their science students, that would be really useful.
Indeed, it's certainly an important step. I was going to say I'm reminded of the fact that in the United States, there are many instances where experienced drug developers and scientists join in venture capital firms and are then able to talk to the academic community in very knowledgeable, highly scientific, highly technical terms. Does this happen in Europe? Do some of the venture capitalists and funding agencies in Europe, are they populated with people that have done drug development?
To a certain degree, yes, I've seen that. But quite clearly, we don't even have that many, such a large investor community. So I'm quite sure we can improve on investment as well as employing scientists in the investors community. But I do see that crossover. One of the bigger issues that we saw in Europe is that from our point of view, we don't see a large crossover investors that we do see in the US. And I think that is one of the issues where we can still improve the biotech funding ecosystem in Europe if, you know, big funders like the European Investment Bank and investment funds could look into creating big crossover investors with really deep pockets that could help fund the critical and traditional valley of death the phase three studies for biopharmaceuticals, that would still be a very useful step forward in facilitating the funding of new and innovative products in Europe.
On that note, we need to close. Barbara Freischem, thank you very much for your time today, and best of luck with your EBE.
Thank you very much, and thank you for talking to me.
For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.